Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Callie Fell, your host, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health. Hello, and welcome back to Venus Rising. Today, I have the privilege of sitting down with Liz Shire. Liz is an amazing woman. She's an author, editor, and product developer living in Washington, D.C. with her husband and two children. Liz is a three-time egg donor and sits on the leadership team of We Are Egg Donors. We might refer to them as WAED. This is a volunteer-run global support network for over 2,000 current and former egg donors across the world. WAED is regularly featured and media outlets, including the New York Times, The Atlantic, NBC, Wired, and others. As media liaison for WAED, Liz speaks frequently with journalists about the experiences of egg donors, the ethical issues involved in anonymous gamete donation, and the urgent need for a long-term longitudinal study of the effects of egg donation on women's health. I'm very excited to talk to you. And as I do with most of my guests, I would really like to start with your personal story, if you don't mind sharing that, specifically around your personal egg donation. And kind of some of the questions I have are, you know, what was your motivation for donating your eggs? Do you know how many you donated or where those eggs ended up? I have a lot of follow-up questions. So if you wouldn't mind starting with that, that would be awesome.
Yeah, sure thing. So I first donated eggs in 2005 and did two more cycles between then and the end of 2007. And my motivation was purely financial. My mother was being evicted and I was working full time and also had a couple of part time jobs. And that was really only enough to cover my own bills. And I needed money for the lawyer and her back rent. And I saw one of those ads for egg donation. I saw one of those ads that says something like, be an angel, give a gift. And they've got a sort of soft focus picture of a flower and a woman cradling her belly. And it talks about this compensation of, at the time, $8,000 was the standard comp for egg donors. This is in New York in the mid-2000s. So I did that first cycle. I was on a protocol which is not done anymore, generally, and for very good reason. It is a long cycle, heavy daily dose of a drug called Lupron, which is used off-label. It is very uncomfortable. You wake up many times in the middle of the night with night sweats and other side effects. And after my three donations, I did end up with hypothyroid disorder, which is a not uncommon outcome from being on Lupron. I did not at the time plan to have my own children, and so that was not really a consideration for me. I was 25. I didn't know anybody who had kids. That was just not a thing in my world. So I really just believed what the fertility clinic told me, which was, at the time, the donor coordinator said to me, egg donation saves lives because infertility is so painful that there is a correlation with suicide. So you're not only creating a life, you may be saving one. And there was a lot more of this language, not just about gift giving, which is now very troubling to me, but about how you were creating a family, maintaining a family, you know, completing a family, a lot of that. And I really believed what was told to me at the time. So I went back for two more donations. And at the end of it, I was in a lot of pain. I was having very severe abdominal pain that I will say turned out to be entirely unrelated. But the clinic called back and wanted me to do a fourth donation, which is why I think that some of the earlier cycles, which is why I think that the cycles I did were successful and resulted in pregnancies and live births, although I do not know. And when I told them that I was in too much pain, I couldn't stand up a lot of the time, I couldn't walk or run, they got very, there was a lot of guilt tripping involved. There was a lot of, wasn't I willing to do the work? Wasn't I willing to help a family? Did I think I was more important? That kind of thing, which really left me with a pretty bad taste in my mouth about the whole situation. So at the end of those three donations, which were wholly anonymous, at the time that was all that was available, they literally hustle you down the cargo elevator at the end of the at the end of the cycle. I basically went one way and the eggs went another. And I thought about it occasionally, but honestly not a lot until I found We Are Egg Donors. And it was about that time that I had just gotten together with my husband and he really wanted kids and we were talking about starting a family. So I started thinking more about what had happened from the results of those donations. And so I joined the group thinking, you know, I have all these ethical questions, like was that selling children? What did I do there? What happened to them? Is anonymous okay? Is compensation okay? And I found this group that was largely women who were currently donating. So there's a lot of questions around, you know, I've had this reaction to this medication. What do I do? I'm going to this city where I'm good doing my retrieval. I don't know anybody. Can anybody pick me up? That kind of thing. But also these conversations that I was hoping to have around the ethics of gamete donation. And so 4 years later, I've been sitting on the leadership team for most of that time, and it's been an incredibly gratifying experience.
That is a lot, and that is an intense story. And I'm sorry that you had to walk through that as a young adult. I want to back up. And when you talk about they, and they were kind of pushing you along, do you mean the doctors at the fertility clinic? Do you mean who specifically are they?
Sure. So that would be the donor coordinators. You almost never see the doctor. Usually you only see the doctor if you happen not to be under anesthesia yet by the time they walk into the room. The appointments that you have earlier are largely monitoring appointments. So you come in to have your meds adjusted and to have ultrasound. So largely you will only see your coordinator, some nurses, and an ultrasound tech.
Gotcha. So who answers those questions that you might have when you start this process? Is it that coordinator, or who's the one informing you of the risks and the benefits and, you know, informed consent?
Sure. So it is the donor coordinator. Now it is much more common to go through an agency, which is not was not the situation when I was donating. And in that case, your coordinator at the agency might answer some of those questions. I will stop for one moment and say that there is no such thing as informed consent with egg donation. There has never been a study on the long-term health effects. Every single donor I've talked to, and that's now hundreds, has had the same words said to them by their coordinators, which is there are no known long-term risks to egg donation. And that is on the face of it true, because no one has ever looked. And so they don't know what the long-term risks are, because there is no tracking, because it's anonymous, and because donors are not the patients of the clinic. We are not protected by HIPAA. We do not have any right to our own records. And the clinics will often throw away or redact or not give us access to those records. So when donors have issues and they go to the emergency room, they do whatever, now those issues are being recorded by their own doctors. And so there's no central repository for finding out what happens to you afterwards. I did not even sign informed consent. I did not sign a contract. That is no longer the case. What I did sign, I think all I signed was the note saying that my HIV status could be disclosed. But just to say again, that when no one knows what the risks are, there is no such thing as consenting to those risks.
Sure. We've had a couple of guests talk about that, about the lack of congruency between medical records and what happens to them, or maybe even the conceived children from their eggs or their donation, which we'll talk about the word donation, because I feel like, you know, that's a misnomer and a euphemism. And I'm going to jump ahead actually from your story. I have a lot more questions, but since we're talking about the lack of long-term studies, I want to ask you that, because I was talking with another guest and she talked about or alluded to that we're not looking, because those that benefit financially from egg donation don't want to look, or egg selling. They don't want to look. The results would be detrimental to their wallet. Do you have the same thoughts on that? Or why aren't we doing a study?
Egg donors bring in $100 million to the third-party reproductive system in the United States alone every year. If it was known how many of us are now sick, that would be put at risk.
For sure. And to jump back to your story, now sick, those of you that are now sick, you talked about this thyroid disorder. Is that something now that's going to follow you forever? Are you on medication? Can you talk a little bit more about your?
It is. And I will say it is very minor. I am on a very low dose of Synthroid, and I will be on it probably for the rest of my life. It doesn't affect my life in any way as long as I'm on the medication. It's really just a pain. As long as I am insured,
sure,
let
right.
me say that. And one thing I think we don't think about in the U.S. is how many donors are uninsured, which is an entirely different problem. But no, this is not, for me, the physical health effects were very limited. It is the mental health effects and the regret, which are the hard part.
So do you know what happened to your eggs?
I have no idea. I have recently done genetic testing on Ancestry and 23andMe, and if children were born of the donations, their parents have not yet had them tested.
Gotcha. And would you want to know?
Absolutely.
So you have two children now. Would you want them to know any of their biological half-siblings if they were found?
I would hope so. So they're only 3 and 4. So they only have the most dubious understanding of how we get babies at all, let alone how we might do it surgically. So that is certainly not a conversation I've had with them. If I should be able to make contact, if I'm lucky enough to make contact with any of the children, soon to be adult, born of my donations, I would absolutely want them to be aware of each other.
I find that a lot of people have that same sentiment that I interview, that they want to know and they want their siblings to know and that sort of thing. So you alluded to some mental health and some regrets. Do you want to talk more about that, or would you like to talk more about that? And do you see other egg donors who have these same types of issues or thoughts?
Yeah, so it might not be right to phrase it as mental health issues. I was drawing a distinction between the physical outcome and the emotional outcome.
Sure. Okay.
Maybe is a better way to put it. I have noticed that there is a pretty distinct line, a temporal line, in how donors feel about their donations. While they're doing it and the couple of years after, there's this almost high of doing it, right? Because you're hearing this message from the clinic or the agency, angel, gift, you've done this great thing, selfless, sacrifice, all these words, right? And then over time, doubts start to creep in. And that can happen for a number of reasons. Maybe you have your own kids and you look at them and think, there are children out there in the world just as related to me as you are, right? Not my children, not people I'm raising in that sense, but genetically just the same. And that can be hard. Also, you will find that when donors come into donor-conceived spaces, there's an immediate clash and a real moment of cognitive dissonance. Because again, you have this belief of like the sacrifice, the gift, and then you walk in and find that you're talking to people who consider themselves the victims of human trafficking. And that is a lot to square up between those two things. It is very hard to go from, I have done something really good, to not only this wasn't the best thing I could do, to I may have caused irreparable harm to someone else. That's hard for a lot of donors. So again, you'll see this split between people who are sort of still in the thick of it and then people who now have a lot more questions.
Yeah. And so you're saying the children who are donor conceived are feeling like they were purchased or sold.
Yes. And many of them, we tend to say donor conceived children, but there are donor conceived adults who are in their 70s, 80s, 90s who were born of sperm donation. There are people born of egg donation who are in their 40s and 50s, and now the first generation of actual children born of embryo donations who are in their teens, who are more able to talk about their experience.
Yeah, and we've had some of those on the podcast. And so if you haven't listened, those who are listening in today, I'd encourage you to go back and listen, because their stories are quite remarkable. And I think you can't hear the whole story unless you hear from donor conceived people and those who have donated or sold. And it's so funny. And I want to go back to your point about when you're in the moment and how excited you are to give a gift and to be an angel. When I was in college, actually, my friends and I, like, very surface level contemplated selling our eggs so we could go to spring break. Like, that was the thing. Like, we grew up in a rural city, didn't have a lot of money. Like, luckily I had scholarships helping me pay for school, so I didn't have that concern, but I wasn't able to do all the exciting other things. So we chatted about donating our eggs, and I know how ridiculous that sounds now. And I don't want to say that women in college or young women can't make informed decisions or make decisions about their bodies and about their future. But do you really think that these college age girls can really understand, and it doesn't sound like they can, the implications of selling her eggs and those long-term kind of thoughts that she might have?
I mean, that is a really great question. And I think there's probably as many answers as there are people who are considering this. But I do think there are two key parts that you can't understand at that age, and for good reason. And one of the things you can't understand is what the long-term health effects are, because again, nobody knows what they are. So you don't know because nobody knows. Also, in general, donors do not know or usually think about the experiences of the people who are created as the result of their donations. And there's a reason for that. I remember sitting in the donor coordinator's office, and the doctor came in, and the doctor starts telling me what a great thing this is. And on the wall behind him, there's, you know, the success wall, the trophy wall, the pictures of the super cute babies. And there's a guy in a white coat, literally three times my age, telling me what a good thing this is, right? And so you only think to the pregnancy, and then you think maybe as far as the birth and the cute baby. And you just don't think, all these people are saying to me, I'm giving a gift. Under what other circumstances do we consider it okay to give a human being as a gift? That is not a thing we do. But you don't think that far at that age, because you're getting such a strong message from people who are older than you are, who are professionals, and who are telling you what a great person you are. So it's hard to see past that.
And now I would like to, because we keep dancing around this word, right? Donation. And so I'd like to unpack that a little bit more. So unpacking that word donor, and we're using it, and it very much feels like a euphemism and in an incorrect way of using that word. Because I recently read an article by Diane Tober evaluating the role of student loan debt and egg donation. And that's what made me think of this word donor. And the word is a misrepresentation, because women are being paid for their eggs. Like you said, you're paid $8,000 back 15 years ago. It seems they're selling their eggs so they can afford education mostly. But in your situation, there are other things, right? You want to help your family members. You might be in crippling debt. So if we couple that with the advertisements that we see, and if you Google them, you'll see that they're largely targeted to young adults. They can be found on college campuses, which is kind of scary. And it seems like there's a coercive role in this egg selling. Do you agree? Do you think that they're targeting individuals that won't think about long-term effects?
So I have so much to say about this, so you're going to have to stop me ultimately when we get to conversation. Okay.
Okay. I want you to talk as much, because the listeners don't listen to me. They listen to you and our guests. So please talk away. But if I have a question, I'll try to gently be like, oh, but I want to follow up with that. So, but please, I want you to give your input. Thank you.
So you're touching on one of the thorny issues around egg donation as distinct from sperm donation, which is the very comparatively high levels of compensation. And first, let me speak to what those levels of compensation are, because I think there's a lot of misunderstanding around it. Our average donor gets paid between $3,000 and $5,000 per donation today, per cycle. And keep in mind that this is taxable income. You owe the government, the federal government and your state government, if that's applicable, taxes on your money, and it taxes on your donation, and it is taxed at the self-employed rate. So probably about 40% of what you're getting is going there. You do see, you know, you hear these horror stories about, oh, you know, Ivy League, 6-foot, blonde, blue-eyed donor is getting paid $100,000 for her eggs. That happens so rarely that it is not really, that it is very misleading. We have had a ton of donors show up for meetings where these numbers are being advertised, $25,000, $50,000, and they show up and it's a total bait and switch. The coordinator says to them, sure, we were looking for a donor in the ad that has XYZ attribute, but actually they also want ABC attribute. However, we can link you up with this other recipient for which we can pay you $5,000, right? So these large numbers.
That is so cunning.
Yeah.
And so
it is. So these large numbers, wow. I get why they're headline grabbing, but they're just non-existent. I think of it as being parallel to the headline grabbing stories about women who have abortions at 8 months, right? Has it ever happened? Yes. Is it the real story that happens to most people? Absolutely not. So just getting that out of the way. We are one of the only countries in the world that allows compensation for egg donation. In countries like Australia, it is not allowed at all. In Australia, you also cannot have an anonymous donation. So they are much, they have just a generally much different model at all, and a much, much better health outcome for their donors. Donors are expected to have finished their own families, to be older, and they are not stimulated to the rates that American donors are. An Australian donor usually retrieves 10 to 15 eggs. It is no longer uncommon for an American donor to be hyperstimulated to 60 or 80. So totally different model. In Canada, you can be reimbursed for expenses up to about $5,000. And what that means is that what actually happens is they cut you a $5,000 check and you fill out a spreadsheet with fake expenses up to $5,000, right? And what that creates essentially is a global marketplace where women from other countries, because of course there's a dearth of egg donors there, will fly American donors to wherever they are and have a cycle done there. So really all it does is create a greater market in the US. And not elsewhere. Fine. So there are a couple of reasons that I think it is not ethical not to compensate donors, which I realize is not a popular opinion, so I will explain why I have it. And there are a couple of reasons. Number one, as I noted, the US is one of the few countries where compensation is legal. It is also the only country I can think of with a significant donor pool without universal health care. Many donors, myself included, spend some of, or most of, or all of, or more than their compensation on helping to diagnose and fix the damage done to their bodies by their donations. So the compensation ends up acting as this sort of de facto insurance. Also, remember, a lot of donors are not insured at all. You know, you mentioned earlier that you were considering donating your eggs to pay for spring break, which is I'm not judging at all. That is, you know, those kinds of costs are certainly a motivation for many people. But a lot of egg donors are poor. They are donating because they can't pay the rent or they can't pay their mortgage, and so this money counts for a lot. The second reason I think it's unethical is that not paying egg donors is just one more way of devaluating work done by young women. This is not sperm donation. It's not walking in off the street, having your moment with a cup, and then walking out. This is weeks and months of very heavy doses of hormones, which are not generally given to young women, and so doctors do not know what to do with you afterwards, and with a surgery at the end of it. If you do a long cycle or a travel cycle, you're spending hundreds and hundreds of hours during which you can't do other paid work. And so you can probably hear in my voice, I get frustrated when people slag off donors for accepting compensation, but do not expect the doctors, the nurses, the coordinators, the receptionists, everybody else involved in this who is not taking a medical risk and is not putting in that kind of time. They have no problem with them getting paid. It's just the young woman who's actually doing the work who is expected to do it unpaid. And that is why, just to bring this all back to your original question, one of the reasons why I find the word donor so damaging, because it is not only super hurtful to donor-conceived people who are not super thrilled about the idea of being donated like an old couch, but it sort of pushes this idea of self-sacrifice where donors end up accepting treatment from clinics and agencies and doctors that they would never accept from a boss. So I think it would be a lot better if donors were seeing their work as work, which is what it is.
No, I love it. And I love how you all brought it back. I feel like if I would have given that answer, I would have trailed off onto some trail that we weren't even talking about. So that was very thorough. Thank you. So let me understand you correctly. You think donors should continue to get paid. Like, your solution would be to continue to pay, but at a higher amount. What would your solution be then, Liz? This is a very loaded question.
That is a loaded question. And you know what, Callie, I don't think I have an answer. And I do want to make a distinction here that the majority of donors out there are donating to strangers, right? And that is a very different circumstance from someone who's donating to a sister, a cousin, a friend, which can have its own pitfalls. And we see those happen all the time also. But I am not arguing that compensation should happen in the same way there. And that is largely because we see much better health outcomes for our known donors when they have a relationship with their recipients. And I think that's because the customer is sitting in the room. The doctor is a lot less likely to continue hyperstimulating a donor if the person who is paying the bills is sitting there with her.
Right, right. And you bring up an interesting point. You call them the customer. And the true customer is the person who is buying the egg or the sperm. And that's who, to be frank, fertility clinics want to please, right?
That is who they want to please. And that kind of ownership leads to yet more challenges down the road because, you know, we talked very, very briefly on embryo donation earlier. We have seen a number of donors who have put in their contract that they'll want to be informed or give consent if any extra embryos made with their eggs have been donated. Doesn't happen. Nobody adheres to that. So we have donors doing genetic testing and suddenly finding out that instead of two families and two donations, they have a couple of dozen genetic children across the world, right? So that sense of I bought it, I owned it can cause a lot of grief.
Yeah. Another guest on the podcast spoke to that as well, that as soon as her genetic material was no longer hers and she had no say over it once it was in the hands of the clinic. So you mentioned while you were chatting about the importance of the word donor, that now women are being super ovulated to donate 60 to 80 eggs. Doesn't that go beyond what the ASRM recommends? Don't they only recommend a certain amount?
As far as I'm aware, the ASRM does not make a recommendation on number of eggs. They make a recommendation that donors should not donate more than 6 times, which is just a recommendation and is overlooked all the time. It's also, I should say, as far as we're not based on anything. Because there's no study. That is just sort of a number that someone figured sounded safer.
Gotcha. It seems like there's a lot of recommendations that really aren't based on anything and that aren't being followed.
That is correct. I think that a lot of doctors who say there are no known risks to egg donations, although we have some sort of worst offenders who just routinely put their donors in the hospital every single cycle and we know who they are, I think a lot of doctors don't realize that they're saying something that makes no sense, because what they're doing is looking at numbers for women with fertility issues who are doing own egg IVF and saying, well, their outcomes are XYZ. So therefore, there should be no issues for you. Now, Dr. Tober may have spoken to you about this as well. There's this number that OHSS, ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, occurs less than 1% of the time. That number seems to have been pulled out of thin air. Nobody can find out where that comes from. But if doctors are taking that from their fertility patients, sure. If you have a pool of 45-year-old women with low ovarian reserve and or other issues in fertility, yeah, they're not going to hyperstimulate very often. But then you give 19-year-olds the same drugs or higher levels of the same drugs, you have a problem. You can't take one demographic cohort and apply the same rules to another demographic cohort and expect to get the same outcome.
I had a woman on the show a few weeks ago that froze her eggs, which is different than donation, but it's this kind of a similar mechanism, right? And she was very persistent that egg donating, doesn't have any type of cancer risks or long-term risks per the studies. And I went back and looked at the studies that she had cited, and you're right. They are all studies that have been done in women who are undergoing IVF for their own infertility. These aren't women who are healthy young adults. And you actually, on the WAED website, you guys bring this up in a article as well that talks about cancer risks for egg donors. And, you know, I just didn't find this to be so clear. And I feel do you have anything else more to speak on that? Or, you know, we've been talking about risk. What other risks do you think that we don't know about?
That's a good question. It is difficult to link a lot of this back, right? Because we have certainly a large number of donors who experience infertility of their own later in life, but a lot of women experience infertility, right? So it is difficult to draw that line. We know a lot of us are sick. It is easy to draw my particular issue back because studies have been done on patients who have been on Lupron for long periods of time for other reasons. So that link is clear. It is less so for most of the issues that we see. However, for the short-term effects, ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome is very clear. And we know which doctors just routinely put every donor in the hospital every time. We have a certain number of donors who just believe that is the natural end of every cycle, is a trip to the emergency room. And that's the situation we're in now. When I donated, I think it was between 30 and 35 eggs each time, which the coordinator seemed, you know, happy with. And I did not have OHSS. I did not have any ill effects from it. You know, N equals one, but that's what happened. It just wasn't a thing. But now there are so many more young women. We've had a recession and now a pandemic. So a lot of people are desperate and not able to pay their rent. So there's now even more of an influx. So you get a donor sick, so what? There's 10 more right behind her.
Wow, that's a really sad way of thinking about it. It's just like we're part of a product, you know, and if this product doesn't work out, then we'll just make a new one.
It's not like we're a product. We are a product. We are literally a product being sold to wealthy people who need help having babies.
You took the words right out of my mouth. Thanks. let's back up a little bit and let's talk more about We Are Egg Donors, how you got involved in it. Tell us more about, you kind of briefly alluded to it at the beginning, but if we have a listener who is an egg donor and is like, wow, I need this support, where should she go? How can she get involved?
Sure. So you can go to weareeggdonors.com, where there is a link to join the secret Facebook group. I believe that the requirement is that you are at least listed with an agency, so you are somewhere in the donation journey, not just thinking about it. And the reason there is that, you know, there have been times over the years when, you know, people from fertility clinics joined the group and started spreading total nonsense. And so there is a certain level of security that that the admins have to keep. And it really is a space like no other that I so wish had been available when I was donating, you know, because donors are by definition really young. And, you know, they've never signed a contract before. Many of them have never seen a contract before. So they come in saying, hey, did this clause make sense? Or I just got back to my hotel and I'm having trouble breathing and the nurse isn't picking up the phone. What do I do? You know, issues like that, other donors can speak to. If, you know, from the very logistical, like I want to put a clause in my contract that I be informed of any births, totally unenforceable. People do it anyway. What's your language? Give me the language to put in. I broke a needle. Where can I find another one? You know, all the way to conversations that we have around, I regret my donations. How can I make this work in my own head? Or this has happened a couple of times, women who donated to sisters or other close family members only to be cut out by their families later because the families decided they didn't want to tell the kid about their genetic origins and there was a rift in the family as a result. So it can get very, you know, very simple questions all the way to the very heavy. And sometimes we see pictures up there of, you know, women holding their, what they call egg babies, you know, the egg babies born of their donations in circumstances that seem like the way this should go, where they have a relationship with the parents, where they are acknowledged as someone, you know, maybe not in the baby's life, maybe in the baby's life, but at least someone who's given health information, who's aware that the baby was born. They can be really, really sweet. And you can see these lovely stories that can be really refreshing after all of the harder stuff.
That sounds like an awesome support group for people who are in the thick of it or who are in that process. But what about those women then that are still just kind of considering it? They're in that place that maybe you were. They're struggling to pay their bills. You guys, I think, have like a blog, right, that answers some of these questions. You guys talk about the risks. Do you feel like We Are Egg Donors is a good support for people who are trying to get advice on whether or not they should go through with this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the blog is a really good place to read about some of the things you might not have thought about. So I did an article for the We Are Donors blog maybe 6 months ago on common red flags to look out for. Red flags such as not being given your medical records or being asked to share an attorney with the IPs, which is, you know, of course, against attorney ethics. All kinds of things like that. There are also articles up there about, you know, how donors have felt sometime after their donations about the pitfalls of anonymity. And I think a lot of what this provides is a really much needed counterpoint to the story of the fertility industry, which is loud and it is compelling and it is funded by a desire to make a lot of money off of people not really knowing a lot about it. So that's, I think, where We Are Egg Donors really shines, is you're getting real stories from real people. And, you know, we hear a ton of stories of donors going back to their coordinators and saying, hey, I'm not agreeing to this in my contract or whatever. And the coordinator will say, are you talking to people online? Don't listen to them. Right. And then the donor's like, wait, don't listen to people who've actually done it. Right. Because wow, we're telling the real story.
So then is it worth it? Is it worth knowing all of these risks, known and unknown? Would you say that it's worth it for a woman to donate her eggs?
I think that anyone considering donating her eggs should do a lot of her own research. I do not think anyone should ever donate without having spent some time reading the stories of donor-conceived people, because that is the story you are absolutely not going to hear from your clinic or agency. And as we spoke about earlier, I think a lot of donors expect that they have created this happy family that maybe is super grateful to them for their sacrifice, for their angelic gift. And what we're finding is that a lot of people born of these donations think of us as deadbeat moms. They think of us as abandoners. They think of their parents who raised them as having designed them, of having purchased them. It is very traumatic. It can be very traumatic. And that is not to say that all people born of egg donations hate their families or that it's always difficult or anything like that. But assuming a rosy view, a rosy, uncomplicated view in which these genetic children will just welcome you with open arms is so wrong and so off base and so unexpected. So I think reading those and understanding where people are coming from is really, really critical before taking any further steps.
That's great. And would you give that same advice maybe for those couples or women or men looking to purchase eggs or sperm?
I would absolutely. I think it's really important for IPs to have these conversations and understand these conversations, because, you know, I really feel for people at that moment when they've tried everything else and they've sunk their life savings into trying to conceive or into trying to adopt, which is, you know, enormously expensive and often impossible. Like, that is a hard moment to be in. And that is when people are most vulnerable to some of these stories and the narrative of the fertility industry. And I think it's really critical that they prepare themselves for what may be on the other side. And that's not to say they shouldn't do it. I'm not trying to convince anyone not to pursue having children via gamete donation. I'm saying certainly don't do it anonymously. I'm saying don't do it by endangering the health of a young woman. There are ethical ways to go about this, and there are very definitely unethical ways to go about it. And the difference between those two is educating yourself.
And I feel like the difference between those two is, you know, I'm going to push back a little bit because I feel like that's a fine line. And I don't, because there's always a risk, right, of harming the person involved, the donor. So I feel like there's not always a right way of going about it. And that's, you know, our view. I appreciate you talking with me and expressing your view. But I think there's a fine line, and I wonder if it exists at all. You know, you have, as a liaison and in this group, an amazing privilege of getting to know so many donor stories. Without breaking confidentiality or giving too much detail, is there maybe one story that stands out to you besides your own? Or if you don't want to answer that, what is maybe an overall theme that you hear from all of these thousands of egg donors?
Oh, that is a great question. I mean, one recent story we heard that was particularly terrible was a woman who flew to Australia to do a travel donation, because again, Australian women often have to import their donors. And she was given expired meds, which were prescribed to another woman, which is not actually all that unusual. Fertility drugs are super expensive, so leftovers are also often recycled. But these are very old.
For people who can't see me, I am shaking my head and putting my hand in my head.
I know this seems normal to me at this point, but your reaction is correct, certainly. But in this case, she had gotten expired med from Mexico, not counterfeit, but certainly not the drugs that the IPs had been told that she was getting. And so she wasn't responding and the follicles weren't growing and all this. So she spoke to the IPs and agreed to do a second cycle with the real medication. But the agency felt that by doing that, she had gone against their contract. And so they canceled her flight home. She was in Australia with her young son. COVID hit. And she ended up having to buy another ticket home before the cycle was even completed. I'm just leaving a silence there. Because and I'm laughing, but it's not funny. It's just so
barbaric.
Horrifying. It's so horrifying.
And I don't think people think about these things. That, you know, it certainly can't happen to them. It certainly won't happen to them. And I think, you know, COVID is in and of itself just an interesting situation and a terrible situation that's going on. And we follow, our organization also follows surrogacy, and that left COVID and surrogacy and kids who were abandoned in hospitals or were in hotels because they're intended parents. That's what IP is, for the listeners who may not know. IP is intended parent for IPs who couldn't get to their children or get to the children that they had, you know, conceived.
So horrifying.
Yeah. So yeah, that I'm just, my eyes are bugging out of my head after you tell that story. And that's just one story. And I'm sure there are many more.
I mean, that is a worst case scenario. I would say that most of the things we hear where you will see other donors rally around and say, no, this isn't just you, is when donors are under pressure to continue with cycles that are having really deleterious health effects on them in the moment, right? Where they're feeling terrible, they're vomiting all the time, they can't sleep, terrible things. And the agency says, well, you can stop the cycle, but you'll be responsible for all of the intended parents' reproductive costs so far in their journey, which could be tens of thousands of dollars. And if you're going through surgery for $5,000, you do not have that money to repay, right? So we just see a lot of coercive behavior.
Is that legal? Like, could they really go after this woman for all of that?
I mean, I'm not a lawyer, so I can't really speak to that. The clauses in the contract seem to say so.
Wow.
Whether they would do it, whether any judge would allow it, is a really different question. But I don't think, I will say that I don't think the coordinator is looking at it and thinking, okay, I'm preparing for a court case. I think they're looking at it and think, if I say this, now the donor will continue.
Sure.
And she does. Well, almost all the time.
Especially if she's already in a hard spot and feels pressured to be put in even a harder spot.
Right, exactly.
I have just a few more questions. It's been great to have you on the show. As the media liaison for We Are Egg Donors. I'm sure you have been asked a million and one questions. What's a question you haven't been asked enough, or you haven't been asked at all, and you would like people to know the answer to?
Gosh, that is a great question. Let me put a slight spin on that and tell you what I would recommend that donors do instead of donating eggs.
That sounds great.
So in addition to being an egg donor, I am a living organ donor. I donated a kidney in 2015. And I think the experience of donating eggs should be more like the experience of donating an organ, because let me tell you what that was like. I received a stack of research 4 inches high on the experiences of kidney donors and their health outcomes. I had several psych evaluations and plenty of medical care going into it. After the transfer, I had monitoring, stringent monitoring for 2 years to ensure my health, and a coordinator tracking the experience that I had, my creatinine levels, all of that. Most importantly, my recipient consented. And I know for sure that that happened, that this did not create a traumatic experience for somebody else. I also have no ill health effects as a result of that donation, which is not true of my egg donations. So when I have young women coming into the group or talking to me through any other media and they say, you know, I want to do something good for the world, that is where I direct them instead, because the egg donation industry is an unregulated, dangerous mess for young women. And I would not encourage anybody to get into it.
I appreciate that honest answer. You mentioned real quick the psych evaluations. And I just want to touch on that because I feel like that's something that's also kind of advertised, you know, or people say, oh, well, you have to go through a psych evaluation before you donate or before you become a surrogate. Is that the case for donation, or is that also?
I think it often is. It was not when I was donating, but I think it is much more common now. Yes.
Do you have anything else that you would like to share with our listeners, Liz? You have a wealth of knowledge, and I wish I could talk to you all day. And maybe we'll do a follow-up interview in the future. If you'd like to be on the show again, I'd love to have you, because I feel like we just kind of hit the tip of the iceberg. And it's so funny. My mom just recently started listening to the podcast, and she was saying how she wanted to know more. And she was like, but you didn't ask this and you didn't ask that. And I want to know more. And so she's like, you need to have these people back and have like a round two so that I can get more information. So, But I don't want to overwhelm our listeners in that regard either. So maybe we'll do this again. But do you have anything else that you would like to share with our listeners?
Just a couple of things. So first of all, we should definitely come back and talk to your mom, because that would be great. but for anyone out there considering egg donation, I would, you know, just give you the, like the very basics of it. Please go to the We Are Egg Donors blog and look up the 6 Red Flags article and see what you need to be looking out for. Do not proceed before you read the stories of donor-conceived people. There is somebody on the other end of this who is going to, their life is going to be the outcome of this decision. So make sure you make it really carefully, and always consult with your own doctor before proceeding. And good luck. Thank you so much for having me, Kelly. It was such a pleasure talking to you.
Likewise. Again, thank you so much. Our time with Liz has come to an end, but you can find some earlier podcasts talking with donor-conceived people on our website and on iTunes. Thank you again so much, Liz, for taking the time to meet with me and share your personal story. It's been an absolute privilege to have you on the show. I'd like to thank each and every listener and subscriber for tuning in. Our goal is, as ever, to create conversations, facilitate discussions, and encourage you to think beyond the masses. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Venus Rising. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes, too, and join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.